All right. Fan pregame. One trophy handed out last night. Could we see another one tonight? It's game five in the Stanley Cup playoffs. And we got pre-gaming it up with two guests here, Ron McLean and Frank Saravelli. Over the next 60 minutes, we'll get you set.
We will also touch on game two, Jays and Red Sox, but probably talk more specifically about some roster news as it pertains to the Toronto Blue Jays. We'll bring that to you in a little bit. And of course, best bets, maybe the last time for the NHL season. So we shall see.
Maybe. Okay, Stanley Cup game five tonight, Edmonton and Florida. That's on Sportsnet, of course, at 8 p.m. And you're going to hear from the man, the myth, the legend himself. Ron McLean joins us ahead of game five. Ron, how's it going tonight?
That's what I keep telling myself, Ailish. Thank you. Let me describe the scene here. I'm in Sunrise, Amaranth Bank Arena on the suites level. So we're about halfway up the bowl. Nice spot overlooking one end of the rink, and Suite 26 is our studio. And Kelly Rudy's just outside the studio where there's a beautiful view of the palm trees and the blue skies. And he's a bit forlorn today. And the reason is there's been social media going around where Patrick Roy's grandchildren say to their granddad, "You were better than Kelly Rudy."
Oh, no.
And Patrick says, "Yes, I was." So Jennifer Botterill is just a few feet further from Kelly, and she's speaking to her father, Cal, the preeminent sports psychologist. And we're going to have Cal phone Kelly and give him a pep talk and get him ready for the big game tonight. So that's kind of what's happening down here.
Well, you've guys got a lot on the go. Of course, you've been traveling all over, and you have to be set for a big one as well. So I like that you're getting the mind right. Let's look backwards on just one more look at game four, because I think it didn't do it justice through the TV screen for us watching the atmosphere in Edmonton. Where would you put that one in the lore of hockey scenes and things that you've been able to cover?
You know, it's funny you say that, because I think what happened is it used to be when Edmonton went off, there would be folks on Jasper Avenue. Northlands Coliseum or Rexall Place was a little bit out of the way from the downtown core. So there'd be a cluster of celebration there and just little pockets of it all over the city. Whereas with the creation of that ice district, everybody was centralized. You had 10,800 took in Shania. You had a whole group in the Moss Pit. It was incredible. And then that just kind of moved maybe four blocks towards Jasper Avenue, but it stayed the whole downtown like a beehive of joy. And I've never seen it in Edmonton. For all that I've seen there, this was the biggest night going off. It was like Mardi Gras.
Yeah, it was. Celebration and optimism, because the Edmonton Oilers are back in this series, of course, after that 8-1 victory. Do you feel, because the Oilers have scored 10 of the last 11 goals in the series, Ron, that they've cracked some sort of code, that they figured something out over the past four periods and change?
It's hard not to think that way. The fact that 15 different Oilers had a point in the game on Saturday night, I always go with Dave Cutler, was a legendary place kicker for the CFL Grey Cup teams in the 70s and 80s, and those teams called themselves the Watch. And the idea was, what's the most important part of the watch? Well, there can't be a most important part, because a watch needs every moving part to work in sync in order to tell time. And that's how they feel like they're suddenly. Stuart Skinner was so, you saw the moxie in his press conference the other day. So he's got it. The rest of the team is contributing offensively. And now it's a matter of, can Bob regroup and give them the game they're going to need? Because there's tremendous pressure. I absolutely think all of us have that same feeling. McDavid on a mission and everybody contributing. Feels like we're going to Edmonton and back here for seven.
Oh, I hope so, Ron. That's my goal, at least. I want to watch more hockey and see you guys have lots of fun on the panel. Can you talk about the 15 different Oilers that contributed with a point? Well, McDavid making history throughout this run for the playoffs. I wonder for you, you've obviously covered a lot of historical runs, but how's this one been, covering Connor McDavid breaking a Wayne Gretzky record on the weekend and maybe still having some more games to continue to add to that?
Well, one thing that struck me, his mom flew in from Florida for game three up in Edmonton. It took her 15 hours, and she maintained a smile, but she said, "I'm not too good," because of the series predicament. He's an amazing, you know, everything. A player, like you saw, I don't know if you did, Mark Messier on NHL.com did an interview talking about easily top five of all time, and he mentioned the skill set, the luxury of time that the speed he has buys him. He just seemed so great the other night when Tkachuk was trying to bully him and Sam Bennett was trying to bully him. He grew up with Bennett, and there's no question that they fed off each other's compete levels. So he's impressive. I feel like Mario got tremendous support when they brought in Ron Francis. That sort of got him over the hump. Wayne had Mark Messier, and so does McDavid have the benefit of Leon Draisaitl. And now it's his turn. You know, that's I felt like for a lot of the playoffs, Leon was helping to lead the way. Now it's his turn to contribute tonight. And I think if he does that, that even makes that idea that we're going seven.
So there's an idea going around, Ron, that Connor McDavid could potentially win the Conn Smythe Trophy, yes, even if the Florida Panthers win, maybe not in five and maybe in six, maybe it's seven. But either way, the Conn Smythe Trophy going to someone who doesn't actually win the Stanley Cup. Can you support, as a hockey purist yourself, that notion?
For sure. Reggie Leach, I watched him do his, and I thought he was amazing in 1976. So Connor's absolutely in the running if it goes the distance. I think we'd all agree if Bobrovsky can get it done tonight, well, then that changes the conversation entirely. One other guy that I would consider, this has never been done, and it won't be, of course, but one guy that's really played a great role, I think, in the whole run is Paul Maurice. That's 2 years now where he's led them to the finals. I just think, you know, I watched him after the Game 4 debacle, and his little line about not too many silver linings here, folks. Bob got some rest, and that's what he came. I always remember back in the 90s when Brian Trottier won his four cups with the Islanders. He went over to Pittsburgh, and the very first game he played for Badger, Bob Johnson was his coach. Very first game he played, they lost 8-1. And Brian Trottier was curious because he'd had Al Arbor, and he wondered, with the paint peel, what's going to happen when Badger Bob comes into the dressing room? And Bob Johnson walked in after the game and said, "Men, there were 9 goals scored out there tonight, and ours was the prettiest one. Have a good sleep. I'll see you tomorrow." So, you know, that kind of humor goes a long way this time of the year. And I think Maurice has been, I mean, it's a delicate one, right? He has to really find the tone tonight to help them relax into a chance to beat Edmonton. But it won't be easy.
How much, Ron, do you think that played into what we saw in Game 4? The fact that, yeah, with the Florida Panthers, they knew they could have won the Stanley Cup that night. They were flying family members in. It becomes bigger than just the 60 minutes of a hockey game. They have multiple chances to try to make that process easier on themselves. But do you think it does explain or partly explain or maybe explain for the most part, majority?
Did you feel that way?
What's that?
Did you feel that way?
I don't know if it was the number one thing. I do think, you know, the way that they want to play is, hey, we want to protect the lead, or we want to play in these short games. We don't want to chase them. And when they got chasing, yeah, that's when you get into an 8-1 scenario. But I don't know how that couldn't factor into your thinking going in, where there's so many other things going on. You know you're not in danger. You know you're not fighting for survival. You're fighting for, I guess, game in that sense. I feel like it had to be partly part of their consciousness or their subconscious, but I think the game state maybe dictated more.
No, I thought the very first shift, Brandon Montour gave the puck away and looked really jittery. Kevin had already referenced the idea that when you fly the family in and all the dynamics of thinking about who gets to come and so forth can be a distraction. And I did feel there was a ton of nerves. And I remember also in 2008 at the Olympic Games in Beijing, we had named Adam Van Cuverden, who had won a gold and bronze in Greece 4 years earlier, as our flag bearer. And one of the thoughts was, this guy, you know, is bulletproof. There is no way pressure will get to Adam Van Cuverden. And he went out in his first kayak competition, and he fell behind a little early. And not only did he fall behind, because he was a lock to win it, he'd won every race all year. As soon as every other boat got in front of him, he ended up dead last in the race, eighth. And so it was amazing how when that vision you have for the night or the race or the day vanishes, it usually goes to catastrophic after that. And that's kind of, I feel you're on something. Yeah. I think that's what happened that night.
Ron, one last one for you. And we know you have got a long night ahead, and it could be one where you see the Stanley Cup awarded. What's your favorite thing about a night like this when you might or may not? In the next couple nights, you will see a Stanley Cup awarded. How about that? What's your favorite part about the entire ceremony in the evening?
Just the interviews. Ailish, I love listening. Last year, I remember every Vegas Golden Knight just seemed to touch the heart. I, in particular, was Kelly McCrimmon was a dear friend, and when we lost him in the Yaroslavl plane crash, his parents, Byron and Faye, live in High River, Alberta, and Kelly came on and he said to the boys, he says, David and Elliot in this case, I gave you permission to ask me about this, and then he broke down anyway. And I just love it. You know, I think when it comes to the night the cup is won, I always say it's not about X's and O's, it's about XO's. You know, you just feel the love of the game and the love of your family for all they went through and have done to support you. That's definitely the highlight.
All right. It could be tonight. It could be Friday, or it could be Monday. And we hope that we see an exciting game nonetheless. Ron, we appreciate your time tonight. Enjoy what's left of the finals, and we'll talk soon.
Yeah, me too, Ailish. And thanks, Justin. Talk soon.
Thanks, Ron.
Ron McLean, host of Hockey Night in Canada. Of course, we got Game 5 tonight, Edmonton and Florida, and it's an 8 p.m. puck drop. He said something that I liked. They wrote it down. A beehive of joy. That's what he called Edmonton.
An oxymoron.
Why? Because bees can't be happy?
I don't like beehives. They don't bring me joy.
But maybe they're buzzing with energy and joy, and I think that that was a really great way to describe what Game 4 was in Edmonton and how important it was to that city and how important that momentum might be going into tonight's game. And, you know, we've talked a lot about who has the upper hand. Is it the Florida Panthers that kind of got that one out of the way, the bad game, the one that is very uncharacteristic to the Florida Panthers? Poor defensive play. They just didn't even look like the same team.
Yeah.
Can they flush that and just be like, all right, now we can just win the cup at home. No problem. No pressure. We still have the advantage. They got that one out of the way. Or is it the Oilers that are coming in with the beehive of momentum at this point that have given themselves new life, that have seen maybe a more human Bobrovsky, and that know that they can bounce back and know that they've had a season full of trial and error, and this is all about stringing together one game at a time? I find that these are really hard to compare which is the stronger force.
I think it's an easier game to play if you're the Edmonton Oilers, for sure, right? Because it's hey, that we've already been written off, we had our party, and that was great, and we have some momentum from that in Game 4. But it's the expectation is not yet that you should win this series, that you should be the Stanley Cup champions. The expectation still is that Florida gets it done tonight. So if we're talking about pressure and we're talking about, you know, talking about families and setting up for a celebration potentially, like that is not part of the process. They can just zero in on one thing, and that is dragging the Florida Panthers back to Alberta. The Panthers still have all those other thoughts, and maybe not twofold, but I think there are other things that they're going to consider now because it's like, oh, we better have this party at home. We better do it at home. We don't want to have to fly out again. We don't want to get dragged
back
to Alberta.
It feels like all bets are off, right?
It doesn't feel...
No, it does.
Yes.
It does.
I was going to say tonight's winner win the Stanley Cup, and it's probably too early to say that, but boy, is it going to be hard to play that Game 6 in Florida if you're the Florida Panthers, if you fail to get it done in Game 5. So I think the pressure's still... rests on their shoulders. It probably ratcheted up a bit. There was no pressure in Game 4. That probably should have been the game where they could have felt easy and they could have felt more comfortable because, yeah, there's no heat just yet. There's heat now, and there's more heat if you lose this game. And definitely their intention should be preventing that flight back to Edmonton.
I thought this was, and I've talked about the Oilers and their mental fortitude and like the toughness that they learned this season quite a few times when I've been trying to give, I guess, reasoning behind why I think the Oilers can come back in this series. Bud saw a great stat in Sportsnet Stats, I believe, tweeted it out. This year under Chris Knobloch, so the new era of the Edmonton Oilers, after they had lost three straight games, they went on three different winning streaks. One was an 8-0 winning streak. One was that 16-0 winning streak, which was unbelievable. And another one was 5-0. So they can seriously sit in that locker room and say, we've lost three games before, and then what do? One at a time. We put one together, two together, eight together, 16 together. Mm-hmm. They just need to put four together. So that is real life learned lessons in your season, which sometimes feels meaningless when we talk about it, and sometimes in this city, like, oh, 82 games of what? That's all you need to do when you look around that room is say, 82 games of what? Well, we've done this before. It's one at a time. They have their back up against the wall in a sense. Like, they want to award this trophy tonight. Just one shift at a time, one period at a time. I think that first 5 minutes is going to be crucial with the Florida Panthers crowd trying to, like, eliminate the energy and just say, let's play our game.
Yeah, if I was trying to find a reason for that stat, like why the Oilers can go on runs after they go on losing streaks, I think it is difficult to take too much out of it. But it might be that, hey, something got stale here. Something within the lineup wasn't working, whatever it may be. And I think you could kind of point to lineup changes. And, you know, he made some tough decisions. Evander Kane not playing. But I think the biggest one might have been the formation of a third line with Adam Henrique. And him playing his more natural position, him being able to be more of a contributor because he wasn't trying to find his way on the wing. Like, that might have been the reason why it looked a little bit more dangerous all throughout. Again, I think there were other forces at play here. Some of them some of them, of course, were more about the Florida Panthers than they were the Edmonton Oilers. But when you reach a wall or the dead end on something, which was some sort of lineup decision that Chris Knobloch was using and running out there, and then you go a hard turn, you may have uncovered something, and maybe you could run with that for a while, and maybe this like elongated roster, this roster that has suddenly more depth despite not having Evander Kane last time out, maybe that is the mix to combat what the Florida Panthers have been throwing at them, which is, yeah, you can line up Barkov and McDavid, and you can have some success because you're not as worried about lines 2 through 4. But now I think with this lineup tweak, there might be more reason for Maurice to not chase different matchups, but try to supplement his roster in a different way because, yeah, at the margins, the Oilers had some advantages, which they didn't have through games 1 and 3.
Okay, we're going to keep talking. Game 5 tonight, of course, an 8 p.m. puck drop. But you're mentioning roster changes. I think it's a great time to pivot to some big roster changes with the Blue Jays. Of course, they're playing the Red Sox on a little set here at home last night. Not the greatest showing, but if you bet my best bets, okay, I don't usually brag, but
you can take this.
I gave two best bets yesterday for home runs, O'Neill and Turner. Turner's gotten like
he doesn't hit. He doesn't hit home runs. It was a ridiculous bet,
and they both hit. So stay with us, folks. We're hot. Okay, but the Blue Jays have made some pretty important roster moves here, namely with Bo Bichette being placed on the 10-day injured list with the right calf strain, but retroactive to June 15th, so a few days ago. And bringing up Aurelvis Martinez, obviously the number two prospect. This is huge for the Toronto Blue Jays, getting his major league moment. It's not going to come tonight. It most likely is going to come tomorrow. The lineup's already been posted, and he's not in the starting lineup. But this is the new wave. We've been talking about it all week long. Mm-hmm. It's been about the Buffalo Bisons, kind of from, remember when Babe Schneider started last season, started that wave coming up, and then we've continued it this season. And I love it. I think it brings a spark. It brings maybe a little bit more of like an awareness to some of the players that are not performing at the higher level. Obviously, this is injury related, but I'm excited to see what Aurelvis Martinez can do. He's a power bat. Some areas that he needs to work on defensively, but this team can't get any hits or score any runs, so why not?
Yeah, a little bit worried about we finally have some power in the lineup with Aurelvis Martinez because that's a lot to put on the shoulders of a young kid coming out and just trying to solidify himself as a guy who can hang in the major leagues for a reasonable amount of time. But yeah, he's got some of the best power in the minor leagues, certainly at the position that he plays, second base, 16 home runs, an OPS of .867, more whiffs than chases. So there's a lot of positive things related to that power. But you're right, not a polished infielder. Maybe the reason that has held him back or the reason why he hasn't reached this stage yet is that he can't be relied upon or hasn't been able to be relied upon to make the plays that he needs to make at that position as routine as you want. Started as a shortstop, but was quickly moved. And maybe that said something about where they thought or what they thought he could be as a fielder. But yeah, we're seeing the transitional period without, you know, the sell-off of assets, right?
Right.
Like this is maybe a glimpse into the future, but just in a couple months in overdrive, right? Where you're seeing, you know, the Yusei Kikuchi didn't do much for his trade value last night, but if a lot of assets are sold off, yeah, there's going to be prospects, not just in the Blue Jays system, but from other systems that are going to feature on this Blue Jays team. And you're right. Like, yeah, I understand you want to put a winner on the field and you want to create momentum and you want to continue to sell out or put butts in the seats at the Rogers Center. But this is also very interesting, seeing new players, seeing new talents, seeing the next generation of Blue Jays, even though we're still holding out hope that this year's team can amount to something. So this is part of it. This is maybe the hybrid. This is kind of meeting in the middle here with someone in the system who can help now, and we'll see how far Aurelvis Martinez can take this team with this power bat.
Tonight's lineup will have Horwitz, Schneider, Guerrero Jr., Varsho, Turner, Barger, Kirk, IKF, Ernie Clement, and Chris Bassett starting. Like, think about those names. 1 year ago, most of those were not on this roster. It's a very different looking starting lineup tonight, of course, without Aurelvis Martinez, who we assume will probably get the start tomorrow against the Red Sox, but Bassett on the mound. And this is a tough spot for the Blue Jays. Like, they're going up against the Red Sox ace. Like, you know, they last night was not a great showing. I mean, a lot of home runs hit, if you like home runs, maybe not for the team that you were cheering for. But I'm excited to just see what this can do, give them an opportunity. The Buffalo Bison boys seems like they really are like a community too. The roommates, the buddies. I know Vladdy had said a lot of great things about Aurelvis Martinez and how excited he is for him to come up. So, hey, bring some energy and see what this team can do and get that home run jacket on.
There you go. It would be good to see that home run jacket on Aurelvis Martinez quickly. Before we go to best bets, I want to ask you the question we asked Ron at the end. What's your favorite part of a potential cup clinching night? There's a lot of different things that have become hallmarks of a night like that. You get the cup handoff, you get the team photo, you get the interviews, you get the party inside the locker room, a lot of good things. I personally love the cup handoff. I feel like I have it documented in my brain, all my favorite ones, what it means to the captains when they first receive it.
Trying to decipher who's going to give it to who as well.
I like that too. I mean, we're
betting on
somewhat degenerate, so we've been looking at that the whole way through. But like Rod Brendamore's cup lift in 06, where he's like stomping his feet as he holds the cup, like you just see how much it means in those moments. And yeah, I love when these guys turn into kids, kind of like what we saw in the NBA Finals last night, where we just saw real emotion finally from a Celtics team that's robotically made its way through a couple months of playoffs. When these guys turn into something different than really serious hockey players, I love that stuff.
Yeah, we know hockey players don't usually show a lot of emotion. And so when you do get to see this moment, like it gives chills to, I think, anyone that's played the game. Like, I never was going to win a Stanley Cup, but I know the feeling of like achieving a dream. And I think seeing some players that have never had that chance, it's usually like the veterans that get me the most emotional to see them have that moment.
It could be their, too. The guy that was never supposed to win gets it early, and there's a lot of emotion.
That's so special. I mean, everyone always talks about the Stanley Cup handshake line. That's a special one too. Mm-hmm. You see the respect, like these guys are like, they've got broken this, brained that, fractured this. They can barely hobble themselves across the ice. And they take the time to like respect the opponent and get that respect in the handshake line. Ooh, that just gave me a nightmare tonight.
What's another good thing in the social media era? We're doing the celebrations inside the locker room better.
Oh, that's
like
so
good. The social media personnel for the teams, like they just capture those moments so much better. I mean, Crosby coming in with the cup and being absolutely doused with champagne is one that
comes to
mind.
I've always wondered this. It's game seven, okay? Both locker rooms need to be prepared for...
Got to buy twice the plastic.
So are they both ready in like the plastic and the champagne? Or does that happen right when the final... Like what if there's a game seven OT and team A wins, team B's got to like hide all that stuff?
They can probably get it up before they get into
the
room.
Yeah, they do take some time.
But if it's a close game seven... After 40 minutes, I'm sure preparations are being made on both sides. And that would be the saddest thing ever if there's just
you see the remnants of the plastic.
A stray box of champagne that didn't get moved over to the other room.
That's devastating.
That would be tough.
Okay. Well, I'm going to give you my best bet for tonight, and that is not to see the Stanley Cup. I have the Oilers plus 120 tonight. I told you I'm all for seeing this series get extended even longer. I gave you a couple stats on why the Oilers can rally and put a couple wins together, and they just need to do three more. They're going to win tonight.
I'm all for it too, but I suspect that not that I'm wrong, because I do believe the Panthers are going to win tonight, but that we will be robbed of the chance to see game six and game seven potentially. I think the Panthers probably get it done tonight. And I do think we got an interesting situation where the parlays might be correlated, or the over-under might be correlated with who wins. Like, I can't see the Panthers winning a shootout. If it's 6-5, I mean, it could go either way because it could be overtime, but it would favor the Oilers if there's a lot of goal scoring. And I think if the Panthers get their way, it's going to be pretty nip and tuck, 2-1, 3-1. Maybe there's a couple empty netters. So I'm going to play the Panthers. I'm going to parlay it with under 6.5 for plus 145. And I think if you like the Oilers, maybe play the plus or the over 5.5 with the Oilers, because that's just how these teams, I think, want to win these games.
Okay, let's take a quick break. We're going to talk to Frank Saravelli ahead of tonight's game. We're going to wrap up and talk a little bit about the NBA championship. Of course, the NBA Finals was last night. Celtics breaking records. You've got Jason and Jalen both having their moments.
The Jays.
And I don't know. We could talk about the Boston sports dynasty, because maybe we're getting back into it.
Oh, we got to do that again?
I don't want to.
Every time they do it, I guess we have to.
I guess we don't have to.
And they do it every year.
Well, we should probably do it, though. Oh, give them their due. And maybe it's good karma, you know?
It's not. I could have said that the other 12 times.
That's true. Okay. With a quick break, Frank Saravelli will join us after the break.
Hey, it's Ben Ennis.
And I'm Brent Gunning.
We got you covered on all things Leafs, Raptors, and Blue Jays every weekday morning, 6 to 9.
It's the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back to the Fan pregame Sportsnet, Sportsnet 590, the Fan. A little later on, Game 5, Edmonton, Florida. It's an 8 p.m. puck drop here on Sportsnet. If you're looking for the Blue Jays and the Red Sox, 7 o'clock first pitch on Sportsnet 1 and Sportsnet 590, the Fan. We're going to continue our Florida connection with Frank Saravalli at dailyfaceoff.com. Frank, how's it going? Wow.
Good. That is pretty red, isn't it?
That's Florida.
Wow. That's a good thing you're not that like sunburnt. You don't blend in. It's good.
Yeah, I'm working on it, though. I'll get there at some point in the next maybe 3 weeks or so.
Okay, three more weeks. I hope not. We might see. Okay, so let's start there. We might see a cup hoisted tonight. We might see this series extended. But let's start with the case for the Florida Panthers to win tonight's game. You know, home ice advantage. They got the bad game out of the way. Can they play that bad two games in a row? Who knows? What's your case for the Panthers to win tonight in Game 5?
Well, first and foremost, Sergei Bobrovsky bounces back. I've followed Sergei Bobrovsky's career since the first day that he set foot in North America, 2010, September, a development camp scrimmage against the Washington Capitals. And someone called me and said, hey, you might want to get down to Washington, D.C. to watch this Flyers prospect that they have. He's going to be starting games for this team this year. And I said, who? Never heard of this guy before. He has been the most dialed in, detailed, and dedicated goalie that I've seen or come across in my career. I have a hard time believing that he's going to play that poorly again. Although I do think the way that that game unfolded obviously gave some much needed confidence to some of the best offensive players. But if you're making a case, first and foremost, it's Bobrovsky. Second, you would think that the Florida Panthers would probably try to defend a lot better off of the rush. There were little wrinkles and things that the Oilers did, including some significant aerial passes that they connected on, guys catching pucks at the far blue line with their hand, things that I think Florida will be well adjusted for in Game 5. And then the last part is just the pure desperation of not wanting this to continue. This is a night where if you're the Florida Panthers, you try and empty the clip because you don't want to go back to Edmonton for Game 6. You don't want to have the pressure in this series shift to your team. And you've got an unbelievable opportunity to hoist the Stanley Cup for the first time in your franchise's history in front of your own fans.
Among the main drivers behind it getting out of hand on Saturday night, how much do you think it was, hey, we can win the Stanley Cup. We got all of our family here. We got the champagne eyes. We got it all going on. Like, do you think that was the main driver or did something else slip up? I mean, there's a lot of options, but Bobrovsky, the Oilers themselves, but the psychological factor of, hey, we can win. Where did that rank among things that went wrong?
Justin, I would say it was probably pretty high. I mean, put yourself in their shoes, right? I'm standing in the Florida Panthers dressing room. The morning of Game 4, you have a chance to sweep, and you're sitting there asking players and the head coach, when's the first time you dreamt about winning the Stanley Cup? Mm-hmm. It's hard for that to leave your psyche. It's hard for that possibility that you probably lost sleep over and have been chasing for some of these guys since they were 5 years old, to think that you're that close to it and all you need is one game to pull it off. There's that human nature part of it, if you're playing amateur psychologist here, but then there's also the other part, which is the Oilers don't want to be embarrassed. They didn't want to have a sweep. There hasn't been one since 1998. And they wanted to try and find a way to extend their season and give themselves a shot. They actually, I'm spending time around this team for the last 6 weeks, they truly believe that if there's going to be one team that's going to be able to make history again in the Stanley Cup final, that it's them with some of the best offensive players we've ever seen.
So for the Florida Panthers, is there reason to believe it'll get easier or it's going to be easier tonight, knowing that the result is the same? If they win this hockey game, they get to celebrate with their friends and their family and their teammates on the ice and pop champagne and do that whole dance.
Well, I think it's easier in that you've been through it once, right? That was new ground for that team to churn through. They hadn't been in that position before to have a chance to clinch a Stanley Cup. Now they've been through it once. They have an opportunity now in way more friendly confines. They're not in a position where their team has to get a charter together and send their family anywhere, much like they would have to do for Game 6 at Edmonton if that were the case. Right now, they're basically just win one game and it all, you know, goes away. It all is simple. You can walk together forever. You'll have a banner. Flags fly forever. It's an unbelievable opportunity that they have in front of them, and the ability to say, hey, we also still have some runway here. We're in an unbelievable position, up 3-1.
Okay, so let's say that the Florida Panthers do maybe not win tonight, but like let's say they win the Stanley Cup. What can be learned about this Florida Panthers team, whether just this season or last season, the way that they've constructed their roster, their coaching, their depth, their physicality, to make them the championship caliber team that doesn't get it over the line if the Florida Panthers do win the Cup? I don't want to jinx anyone.
Well, it's okay. I can assure you that as a media member, you have no impact on the result.
Perfect.
I'll tell you that for sure.
Don't tweet me.
But what I would say is they have the best blend of skill and brawn in the whole NHL. And I asked Bill Zito in between rounds 2 and 3, if you were to explain your team to someone that you has not watched the Cats all season long, what are the best couple words to describe them? And he said, graceful brutality. I know I've brought that up before, but it's so perfectly said. That's what this team is. They are graceful in the way that they defend, in the chances that they create, in their intelligence that they have, but they can also out-muscle you and run you through the first row of seats in the ring. And that's rare in today's NHL. You're either all skill or you're all muscle, and they are both.
Indeed they are. I guess we'll go with the same conclusion here. The Florida Panthers win. I'm not sure when, but they win. What are the Oilers, maybe Chris Knobloch, maybe Connor McDavid, maybe Ken Holland, what are they going to look back on and regret?
Probably not much. I would say that this is a team that the Florida Panthers are probably just that much better than. And the margins are small. The Oilers have some big questions to answer this summer, starting with a Leon Draisaitl extension, which they've already begun initial discussions on. They have their general manager who has 12 days left on his contract, which is crazy enough. They've got a lot to tackle. And I think as you see a team like the Vancouver Canucks begin to address some of their things, they get a big contract done today for Philip Hronek. The worst thing that the Oilers can do is lull themselves into complacency, thinking that they're that close. And they are, but they also still have a lot more to go. So further changes are needed. The next iteration, the better depth, smarter players, better contracts. Like these, you know, you need to continue to infiltrate young players into your roster, or assimilate them, I should say. Look at Philip Roberg. Like, there's a big question to answer. Why wasn't this guy playing all season long? He's been one of your best defensemen the last round and a half. Like, there's lots still to figure out in this equation for Edmonton.
Well, and again, if there's silver linings, you figured out, like, a guy like Phil Broberg can play on your team and will be a big part of their future here. We're talking to Frank Saravalli, dailyfaceoff.com. I'm not sure you can sell your seat at a potential Stanley Cup winning press conference for Paul Maurice, but if you could sell to a third party, how much do you think it would go for? Like, how much are the media members anticipating Maurice's final act here on this Stanley Cup run?
Probably couldn't sell it for that much. But what I would say is maybe the most enjoyable thing about this Panthers run, and not from a selfish media perspective, but really just from having the last number of years gotten a chance to know Paul Maurice a little bit, off camera, what you're seeing now is his true authentic self. And he's totally at comfort and peace with what he is, who he is at this point in his career. The fact that up until right now, he has the most games coached in NHL history without a Stanley Cup. It's been a long journey. I mean, think about the Panthers who haven't won in their entire franchise existence. They started in 1993. By 1995, Paul Maurice was already an NHL head coach. He's been at this a very long time. He's never been this close. He's gotten to the Cup final. This is his third trip, lost the first two. And there was a period of time, really not that long ago, 3 years ago, he had left the Winnipeg Jets, and I talked to him, and he was sitting on a dock. I believe it's Lake of the Woods in Manitoba. And he was sitting there, and he said, "It's going to take a really special opportunity for me to jump back in again and stop fishing on my dock." And it's an amazing place that you can get to if you're at that point in your career where you're peaceful with everything. But to come back with this team, to take them to the next level defensively, to put them, by the way, a true team, a true definition of a team, this has been a special group to watch. And it's been fun to watch him experience all these different things and potentially something totally different for the first time tonight.
We're chatting with Frank Cervelli, had a game five here, Edmonton and Florida. Okay, so Conn Smythe debate. It's been spicy. I wonder where you're at with the Connor McDavid winning the Conn Smythe, but maybe not winning the Stanley Cup.
I probably wouldn't be voting that way tonight. Mm-hmm. I think game five, if it ends in five, is a, certainly premature to have a player in losing fashion be that impactful. He has ramped up his game at the exact right time. He's been far and away the Oilers' best player this series. He was their best player in the second half of the Dallas series. But I would also preface that or add to that by saying, through the first three rounds, I'd spent a lot of it with the Oilers. I would not say that McDavid was their MVP. Mm-hmm. I would say that that was Dreisaitl, and I would say the second would have been Bouchard. So how do you weigh that as a voter? How much extra importance you put on the Stanley Cup final itself? Remember, it's not Stanley Cup final MVP. It is MVP of the entire playoffs. And so to say that through five games that McDavid would have trumped Alexander Barkov or probably even Sergei Bobrovsky or Gustav Hoyberg, I'd have a really hard time making that argument. But if it gets to game six, I think you begin to get into Connor McDavid could win the Conn Smythe in a losing fashion, but I think the series needs to extend a little bit more.
Yeah, I have several issues with it. I think what you outlined there is pretty important, though. Like, everyone looks at McDavid now. He's playing unbelievable. It's mm-hmm. It's peak McDavid. It's so fun to watch. He is the best player in this series, but you're right. He wasn't the best player for the Oilers through three rounds. Maybe in the conference final you could say it, but the first two, I would not have put him in that position. And if you're going to take it away from a Florida Panther, you better have been the best from start to finish for an award that is about the entire playoffs, not just the Stanley Cup final. You mentioned Barkov's name first there when going through the Panthers. You don't have to reveal your ballot, but you name three in order. Is it Barkov, Bob, and then Forsling? And how much should we dock Bobrovsky for being pulled in game four?
Well, I think a healthy amount, but for me, that's not really what has, in my opinion, cost him a chance at the Conn Smythe. To me, I look at his first two rounds. They were just okay. I'm not saying he was bad, but sub 900 save percentage in round one. Round two, he was 907. You smash the two of those together, and he was 902 to start the first half of the playoffs. He was good. He was lights out against the Rangers in the conference final. He was unbelievable next level in the first three games of this Stanley Cup final. To me, I tend to lean much more towards Barkov having a more favorable case, because look at the guys that they've consistently gone up against that he's limited to next to nothing. Kucherov round one, Pasternak round two, Zibanejad round three. All three of those players, some of the best in the world, totaled one goal between them going head-to-head against Barkov. So, you know, I look at it and I say, Barkov, I think, has been on the ice total for nine even-strength goals in almost four rounds of hockey. He hasn't had the slip-up. He hasn't had the mediocre round. He hasn't just been okay at any point in a four-round run, whereas I think you can point to some of that in Bobrovsky's resume and say, he's been really good, but I don't know that he's the MVP.
Okay, one last quick one on the Stanley Cup Finals. All six of us rally towels on the chairs. Do you see any rally towels from where you're sitting, Frank? No?
No rally towels near me. This is the press box, and we don't root.
Yeah, but don't you see them? Because they say all six of us, and the Florida Panthers are, like, playing into the fact that there's only six Florida Panthers fans in the... You know, you get
it?
Oh,
I didn't yeah. realize that was what it
so
was. I thought it was the five skaters and the goalie.
No, it's like all six of us, like, you know, they don't have a lot of fans. I just want to know what the vibe's like there, because they're really leaning into, like, having no fans, but they're going to win a cup maybe.
Look, I covered way too many games in this building with quite literally 6,000 people in here. You can make the joke if you want, but I've seen it and lived it. It was legit. fans.
There are real fans.
There are real fans. And I saw the third party, forget Paul Maurice's third party tickets to get into that press conference. It's pretty expensive to be in the building tonight if you're a Florida Panthers fan, which is, I guess, reasonable given that they could win the Stanley Cup tonight. Okay, we're getting into silly season. We're almost there, I guess. When this cup is awarded, we'll be fully entrenched in that. A couple buyout nuggets today. Goodrow from New York, some buzz about Jeff Skinner. The most intriguing buyout candidate for you is who, Frank?
Still Pierre-Luc Dubois. I mean, that's the guy that I look at and say, if this Stanley Cup final ends in five or six games, it makes too much sense for the LA Kings. I think they have to make a choice. They made the acquisition. They gave up significant assets to get him. They paid him the big boy contract. He didn't deliver. And you have this one opportunity to get out of jail. It's not get out of jail free, but you could save $30+ million in real cash, not to mention have really manageable cap hits for the next 14 years. I know that's a long time, but it's spread out over a long period of time. And the only thing worse is doubling down on a mistake that you already made and continuing to pay him at $8.5 million a year for the next 7 years when he already is a square peg in a round hole.
Okay, so it's buyout season. It's almost free agent season as well. You had written your latest article of 75 of the top free agents. There's a lot of free agents on that list. Gensel, obviously, a hot name going into this. Canucks, maybe big players in the market. Obviously, you already mentioned them today with the Roenick extension. But where do you see them looking to spend any of the money that they do have?
Yeah, I'd see if Jake Gensel gets to market 12 noon Eastern on Canada Day that the Canucks will certainly be making a strong play to get him. I think he's, as they go through their list and examine where they're at, there's a need. You need someone to play with Elias Pettersson. There's a familiarity. Played for Rick Tocchet. Played under Patrick Baldwin and Jim Rutherford. It just makes so much sense. And that's certainly going to be a guy that they're looking at and willing to make a strong play for. He's got to make it there. Not only have the Hurricanes had interest in continuing those discussions, but on top of that, they're a team that could also trade his rights elsewhere in exchange for a mid-round pick if they could work out a sign-in trade if the team's interested in that 8th year. So we'll see if someone steps up in between now and July 1st, less than 13 days away.
Last one for you, Frank. How comfortable would you be comparing your resume to that of new Carolina Hurricanes GM Eric Tulsky? Do we have Frank?
I don't know if he froze or if he's just
incredibly
stunned.
Comfortable.
Okay. There he is.
Okay.
He's...
Keep going.
We lost Frank.
Frank.
I don't know.
Bye, Frank.
It was weird. It was only partially delayed on my questions. And then yours was normal again, and then
you didn't want to answer. Your questions were harder hitting, so
maybe,
you had to
think
longer.
That was the case.
Hey, can I read the Tulsky resume?
Sure.
Okay. In case people hadn't seen, Eric Tulsky spent 10 seasons with the Hurricanes originally as a consultant. His
assistant
resume
GM, he's moved up the ranks.
A resume just with Hurricanes is cool in itself, but this is where it gets really exciting. He holds a BA in chemistry and physics from Harvard. Ever heard of it? A PhD in chemistry from University of California, Berkeley. He also conducted a 2-year postdoctorate study at the Naval Research Lab in Washington, D.C. He also worked in the high-tech industry for 12 years, managing teams of researchers focused on using nanotechnology to solve problems in DNA sequencing, solar energy displays, and energy storage. And he holds 27 U.S. patents.
Listen, hockey is serious business, and I appreciate that he wants to lend his knowledge to the game and improve it and improve the Carolina Hurricanes. But shouldn't he be solving world problems with that
he
resume?
He needs to be.
Like, it's trivial what you're doing. What he's running the Carolina Hurricanes trivial compared to what he could be doing.
Definitely.
With that sort of resume. I would not want to compare mine to his.
Imagine being like the intern that has to try to learn. You're just like, what? Sorry, I don't understand. I don't
his
know
coffee
nanophysics.
Order is probably like beyond.
No, he's probably like, I don't need coffee.
That's true.
My brain is so just trained to run on nothing.
I think that's the case.
Anyway, that's
although
pretty
they
amazing.
Keep running into a wall in the Eastern Conference, so
well,
I don't
need.
Know if he's got a solution.
But like,
for that.
Is this like in all seriousness? Is this the way of the future? Not necessarily having 17 degrees, but maybe we step away from the old boys' club of retired hockey players and we think a little bit differently in terms of an analytical side or a scientific side or whatever other sides there can be. I don't know. It's certainly one of a kind. There's nobody with a resume like this. I'm not thinking that there's ever going to be somebody with a resume like this, but it's interesting.
I'm not sure about that, but I am sure that Bill Zito has a better hockey resume than that of Eric Tulsky at the moment. And this is a former lawyer, former agent, a guy who appreciates and has brought graceful brutality to the Stanley Cup playoffs. Like, I do think that what he's done is more impactful on what we're actually seeing. I think the Carolina Hurricanes might be looking at things a little bit too binary or too narrow-minded in some ways. And again, that's not like a reflection on how smart the guy is. I'm sure he could do quite well on an SAT test if given at any time a drop of a hat. But I don't know if that's exactly what a hockey team needs to be successful. Pretty sure Billy Zito's got it figured out too. And he's a smart guy. I actually think he went to Harvard too. So maybe it's just Harvard. Might have to double check that. But I know
he actually went to Yale.
Well, okay, Yale. It's Ivy League and not Dartmouth. So I think it's a pretty good place to
Wait, be. Why did you say not Dartmouth?
It was a shot at you, of course.
That's so rude. Wow. So anyway.
You're pretty impressive, too, with that
resume. The Celtics won another world championship. That's how I hate how they call it that.
With another brainiac, Jaylen Brown.
Yeah, and he's really smart, too. But do you like how they call it, like, world champion? Anyway, we did that with the Raptors. Anyway, they have 18 of them, though.
It spawns a million takes when a non-hockey team wins a championship.
World championship. Yeah. I don't know. I don't think that the NBA Finals did it for me. I mean, the Celtics were the favorites forever. They end up winning. Maybe it's just because Boston's not one of my favorite sports cities, but the four major Boston sports teams have won 13 championships in 23 years. And I honestly think the Celtics could be this next dynasty that we see. You know, the Patriots had their run. I don't think they're close to having another run. We're seeing the Red Sox in about 5 minutes on Sportsnet 1 and Sportsnet 590 The Fan. But I don't think they're on the cusp right now. They have a pretty good young system going, but they're not on the cusp. I would say that the Orioles are way closer. And then you've got the Celtics, who I think are right in the thick of being like the young favorites for the next while. Then the Bruins, who surprised many, but I don't think are on the cusp.
I don't know if they're in a position to accumulate every championship over the next 5 to 10 years at Boston as a city. I think the Celtics are definitely their best team. I think they're probably best positioned to win in the next 5 years, but I'm not giving them another NBA title just like that. Like, this was a organization banner. This was a team before anything else. And generally, that's not how you win in the NBA. You win with superstars. And I think it was even proven last night that Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, yeah, they answered every question about themselves as both individuals and in a partnership. But as individuals, as just single pieces, I don't think they could drive a championship team. I don't think they're Nikola Jokic. I don't think they're, you know, go through the history, Kobe Bryant's, et cetera, et cetera. Like, I don't think they're at that level. And generally, the teams that win are a singular superstar with a really impressive supporting cast. I think the biggest issue is they didn't have a challenger this year. Denver was knocked out in the second round when they could have been that challenger. I think there will be a team that makes a move around a superstar that will be able to challenge the Celtics next year and in years to come. But you have to credit a group, a management team that had two truly special players. They're great players. They're not the best in the NBA. Great players, and they built an amazing team around them, and that was enough this year to win an NBA title.
6 years, six different NBA champions since the Raptors. The Raptors, the Lakers, the Bucks, the Warriors, the Nuggets, and the Celtics. So it's kind of the changing of the tides from dynasties to not one and done, but teams feels like it's more of an ability for a team to have a hot year, to have a hot run. But 6 years, six different champions has been kind of a new phase for the NBA. I wonder if you start looking ahead, who's the favorite for next year? Haven't seen it yet. Is it the Celtics?
I'm sure they will be, but there's Shea looming.
There's Shea Reap.
Luka's going to come back. Jokic is still there. Embiid might be getting another superstar.
Yeah.
Like, there are a lot of options, so I don't think we have any clarity yet. We know it's going to be silly in the NBA offseason.
That's always silly. Okay. Whew. Game 5, 8 p.m. Edmonton and Florida on Sportsnet. If you're looking for the Blue Jays, Sportsnet 1. In about 5 minutes, and also Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Do we see the greatest trophy in sports tonight? No.
Yes.
I don't think so.
I think we do.
I'm going with no. I want to have another night of hockey.
I hope you're right.
If not, enjoy the game, everyone.